Bioshocked. Part 9. Not adding up. I'm starting to think we should have waited for the bathysphere. Elizabeth mused worriedly. Less thinking, more running. I took her hand and ran for the street leading out of the university section. As I did, I heard hooting and yelling. I was afraid of this. A large group of immature people pressured to stay ahead of their peers scholastically. Of course they'd be taking gin tonics to boost their brains. And when the atoms started to run dry, their brains were probably the first things to turn to oatmeal. Pack of young adults with overactive hormones, the energy of youth, completely insane and probably packing weapon-grade plasmids. I was better off dealing with spider splicers. Come on, the way's out just ahead. Don't wait for me, Elizabeth said back. For a moment, I entertained the idea that she said that because she didn't want to slow me down and just was being noble. Then I saw her running up alongside me and starting to get ahead. No, she wasn't being noble, she was being athletic. I pumped my legs to keep up with her, and we turned a corner to see the large entrance up ahead with an equally large pressure door. That was closing. Come on, Elizabeth yelled, and I hot-footed it towards the entrance. 30 feet, 20, 10. We dove under the door that closed, nearly slamming shut on us. We were left in darkness with a light far ahead at the other end of the street. You okay? I asked, getting to my feet and wiping my hands on my shirt. Fine. There was something in that voice that seemed hesitant. Of course, considering I've only known this girl a few days and already confessed that I want to marry her. Oh, good gravy, I am such an idiot. Stupid, stupid, stupid! Mark? Huh? What? Are you alright? Yeah, I guess we better keep moving, seeing as the way behind us is sealed off. Start heading towards the light. Let's just hope this isn't a case of jumping out of a frying pan and into a fire. As it turned out, the carnival wasn't as much of a threat as I originally feared. The carnival had been abandoned for a long time, the rides were silent and broken down, and the games of chance, while still largely intact, had been almost completely looted of prizes and equipment. No more food, not even any dead bodies to attract the attention of the little sisters or the big daddies. I got the same feeling I got when I got to the Fontaine department store, only this place was in shambles and disrepair. After a quick check, it became clear that the likelihood of facing any threats in this area were non-existent, and we were clear to head to Minerva's Den. As we navigated through the carnival, I heard Elizabeth clear her throat as we passed a cotton candy machine. Mark, can we talk? God, I really, really hate being wrong all the damn time. Sure, I asked, my voice a lot more cheery than my mood. Look, I think we need to talk about us. I think I may have been a little emotional at the time we met. I was scared and vulnerable, and you were there for me, and you treated me honorably, and I can't tell you how grateful I am for that. But when you told me about what you wanted, and I realized how you felt, it was a little daunting. I'm afraid if we continue on like this, there's too much of a risk that the reality won't quite live up to the expectations. I knew it. I just knew it was good, too good to be true. Now, before you start thinking the wrong things, Mark, just can't we go back to discovering more about each other? I know what you want and how you feel, but you barely know me, and I barely know you. Elizabeth stopped and looked up at me. I couldn't tear my gaze away from those wide blue eyes. You're certain how you feel about me, but are you certain you know why? And my physical appearance doesn't count. I stopped. I thought about what I loved about her, but as much as I hated to admit it, there was too much about her that physically attracted me. There were some reasons that weren't physical, but they were fewer than I liked. I know what you're thinking, Mark, because I feel the same way. I look at you and yes, you're easy on the eyes. You're strong and honorable and honest and brave, and those are admirable traits, Mark, but I want to be able to love you, not just admire you. She took my hands and held them in her own. Do you understand? As much as I hate it, I did see her point. I get the idea, I said. She must have heard the sour tone in my voice. Don't pout, Mark. You're a hard act to follow. And my head won't turn as easily as I might think. I've already met the so-called best and brightest, and let me tell you, none of them have impressed me the way that you have. So, unless Superman or Captain America decide to come visit Rapture, she added with a smirk, your chances look pretty good. I couldn't help but smile a little. Okay, I'd be careful if I were you. If Wonder Woman or Lady Blackhawk show up, you might be in trouble. Elizabeth laughed. God, that sounded good to hear. Should I take note of your tastes in women in skin-tight clothing with a predilection towards tying men up? Well, you're the one interested in men who don't get that underwear goes under the clothes. I felt the cold as soon as I got closer to the entrance to Minerva's den. More Greek mythology, named for the goddess of wisdom. The poster showed an owl clutching data storage media in its claws. This place really had more wisdom, all this wouldn't be happening. Look, Elizabeth said, pointing to a pair of large portraits on the side of the entrance to Minerva's den. On the left side of the door was a portrait of a black man wearing a suit. The plaque under it read Charles Milton Porter. Across the bottom of the portrait was painted in rough red letters, Traitor. The other portrait on the right showed a picture of a severe-looking man with a thin mustache. Under his image was a plaque that read, Reed Wall. Huh, I mused. Well, that's new. What? A black man in charge of a place like this, given this much responsibility, on the merit of his considerable intellect? I used to know guys back in school who would rather swallow their own tongues than acknowledge equality, let alone superiority, of anyone with a different skin color. I shook my head. And then they make him into a big daddy. Ryan and his cohorts have a lot to answer for. Look for any signs or maps leading to... Found it. Cold storage. This way. I followed her down the hall to a room with 8 large cylinders lining the walls. All but one were lit. We walked over to the chamber and saw it. This one was definitely more streamlined. The other big daddies were lumbering hulks, but this one, he looked more agile. This is it, I think. I checked the panel on the side. All I can't be sure. All it says is Sigma. Sigma is a symbol used in math and science, indicating the summation of a series or set. Seems fitting. Also means the number 18. So either he's special, or he's number 18 on the assembly line. See if you can find something to open his chamber. Wait. I found a panel on the wall nearby with pipes leading from it to 2 of the chambers, one of the signals. Better step back a ways, Elizabeth. I'm about to wake up one very cranky baby. Elizabeth nodded and stepped over to the door. If this doesn't work, close the door from the other side. She nodded. Be careful. I exhaled, then activated the switch and readied one of the green hypnotized flesh balls. It was the first time making one in front of Elizabeth, and I felt disgusted. But if it bothered her, she didn't let it show. I've never seen that plasmid before, she mentioned. There was a hiss and the chamber opened. For a few minutes, I thought the contents had been left in the freezer for too long. Then I saw it lurch forward on its own, falling on its hands and knees. Sigma got to its feet. It regarded me, and I knew it wouldn't be long before it reverted. As it stood up, I threw the plasmid at it, and its helmet light went bright green. Sigma stopped moving. Sigma, I said loudly, sit down. He promptly sat, his legs and feet stretched out in front of him. Good. Now take off your helmet. He did, and for a few moments I wished he hadn't. His body was an over-muscled, hyperthyroid mass grafted onto the suit itself. Tubes ran in and out of the neck in odd places, but there were several growths on his body filled with glowing blue... Oh my God, those were Eve reservoirs of some kind. But the worst of it was a look on his face. I thought if he'd been capable of screaming, he would have screamed himself hoarse by now. Please God, let this work. I reached out and touched his head, grimacing as I felt his body was covered with some sort of grainy slime. I felt the familiar tingling sensation in my fingertips and palm, but it was considerably stronger. His body started to glow brightly, even more brightly than the little sisters ever did. I just hope I didn't end up killing him. I looked back at Elizabeth. How long did it take for you when you, became normal again? I don't remember. I just woke up and you were sleeping next to me and my clothes fit again. Clothes. We need to find clothes for him. He can't wear that Big Daddy suit. I stood up. The carnival. There's got to be a locker room where the clowns and others change out of their regular clothes into their costumes. Maybe there's something there that fits him. Mr. Porter? Charles Porter, can you hear me? He didn't answer at first. It had taken a full hour for him to change back to himself, and we had to remove his Big Daddy suit piece by piece so that he'd recover normally. I guess the more plasmids you have, the longer it takes to excise or exorcise the plasmids inside. It's like watching tissue rejection, only in fast forward. We also got him dressed with some clothes found at the carnival. He wouldn't make the cover of any men's fashion magazines, but at least he wasn't walking around like Lady Godiva. Problem is, we didn't know if his mind would be intact. This would be the ultimate acid test, if my new genetic talent could cure even the most atom-corrupted person. Charles? Elizabeth asked. Charles looked up at her. Pearl? No, my name's Elizabeth. Can you tell me your name? Charles struggled to stood up. My name is Charles Milton Porter. Who are you? Mark Jacobs, sir. This is Elizabeth DeWitt. Looked like it was really working. What am I doing here? The last thing I remember was being in Persephone. I'm going to Sinclair Solutions. He looked up at me. What's the date today? September 17th, 1960. My God. He looked at his hands and back at Perez. You... how? Afraid these questions are going to have to wait, Charles. We need your help. Elizabeth, tell him your idea. Elizabeth gave him the full rundown of what was needed to keep Ryan from blowing up Rapture. I didn't understand half of it, but it was clear that Charles had no difficulty whatsoever getting the picture. It can be done. We would need a genetic sampler to make the key. While there may be plenty in the labs in the medical pavilion, the only one in Minerva's den is connected directly to the Thinker's core. Considering it's the only place in Minerva's den where it could be possibly connected, why do we need to make a key? Can't we just change the locks? I asked. The only way to change the lock is to assign it a new key. It's a failsafe to prevent someone from locking down Rapture for good, Charles explained. So we need a new genetic sample to base the new locks on. He looked at his bow. So, who gets to be the new leader of Rapture? I didn't like the way he was looking at me, and I put up my hands defensively. Don't look at me. I didn't even know this place existed a week ago, and I don't want to be in charge. Look, Charles, you're a smart guy, and you seem pretty decent. You do it. Elizabeth sighed, shaking her head. Charles, let me tell you why he didn't know about Rapture. She laid it out, the whole story, while I was burning with embarrassment the whole time. I thought she was gilding the lily a bit, making it sound like what I did to get to this point was a lot more impressive than it really was. I filled in the blanks about what happened prior to her talking to me and observing me, just to keep the record straight. There you go, I said at last, once the tale was told. See what I mean? Am I the kind of guy you want in charge of a whole city? Charles looked at me for a long time, then nodded. Yes. See, Elizabeth, this is a really smart guy, and even he says... Say what? I believe you will be a much better choice than Ryan or most of his peers.
Why?
Because you're the only one who doesn't want to run Rapture. I may be a little slow, Chuck, so help me out of here. You don't want to be the king, and history has shown us that those who don't want the power are less likely to abuse it. Better that than Ryan. At the first signs of trouble, he compromised his values, and from what I have seen, you've stuck to yours. I'll give you a chance, Mark. Don't disappoint me. And one more thing. Please call me Milton. I looked at him. Then Elizabeth, then back at him. And I closed my eyes and shook my head. Personally, I think you both need to have your heads examined, but seeing how Sophia Lamb isn't a part of my Merry Men... You know Sophia Lamb? Melton asked. There was something in his tone that made me suspicious. Yeah, once word got out that I was doing the whole Good Samaritan scenario, she contacted me, wanted me to find her daughter. I lucked out and found Eleanor, cured her, and sent her on her way. I looked at Melton steadily. Why? I fear that Dr. Lamb is as committed to her ideals as Ryan is to the writings of Ayn Rand. She believes in things like collectivism and abandonment of the self. Ryan's a nut. Are you saying Sophia needs therapy too? Melton nodded. She tried to lock her daughter away, keep her away from contact from the children. Didn't stop Eleanor from getting out to see the world around her. I looked over at Elizabeth, and the look on her face confirmed what I already suspected. Elizabeth and Eleanor were alike. Now that I thought about it, they were a lot alike. Similar names, both referred by the name Lamb, both locked away. Elizabeth looked up at me, and she must have seen what I was thinking, saying simply, "Constants and variables." In other words, you're suggesting I watch my step around her. Melton nodded. She may be true in her intentions, and she's not a fan of Ryan, but anyone who believes in what she does as strongly as she does need watching. Hang on. I need to make a call. I took out the service radio. Bridget? Herr Jacobs. I mean, Mark. Are you well? Are you in trouble? I'm fine, Doc. In fact, I've got some good news for you. Is this frequency secure? I cannot be sure. All right. Listen to me, make no reactions over the radio. This is important. Ready? I took a deep breath. First, where are all the little sisters that were cured? They are with me. I have a place where I and my little ones may hide undisturbed. Are Sally and Eleanor all with you? There was a scuffling sound and two familiar voices came over the radio. Mr. Jacobs, they both explained. Where are you? What are you coming here? I drew a picture of you. Girls, I said firmly, one at a time. Sally, you first. Yes, Mr. Jacobs, they said in unison, and the one voice said, this is Sally. Sally, I have someone here who really wants to talk with you. I turned to Elizabeth, who had her hands over her mouth and nose, crying. All yours? Sally? Hi, lady. Who are you? My name is Elizabeth. I know you. You're the nice lady who tried to get me away from the bad man. And the bad man hurt you, and I brought you the gift from the angels. She paused. I'm glad you're with Mr. Jacobs. Maybe you won't be so sad anymore. At this point, Elizabeth was nearly sobbing openly, but she kept it together. I'm glad you're all right now. Mr. Jacobs, remember, you promised. I smiled. I remember, and I keep my promises. Now go play. I need to go talk to Eleanor now. Bye, Mr. Jacobs, she said. Sally said cheerily. There was a pause, and then I heard Eleanor's voice. Hello again, Mr. Jacobs. Hello, Eleanor. If it's all right, I'd like to ask about your mother and father. Do you know who my father, or do you know who my mother is? That question sounded more like a statement. Wow, this kid shoots from the hip. Sophia Lamb, right? I do not wish to return to my mother just yet. I need to find my father. Well, I can help. What's his name? I only knew him by the name he was given. Subject Delta. That is a name for a big daddy. Yes. He's been more of a father to me than anyone else here in Rapture. I want you to help and find him the same way you helped me. Well, if I find him, I'll do everything I can to help him. Thank you, Mr. Jacobs. What do you want me to tell your mother about you? I love my mother, Mr. Jacobs, but I do not like what she makes me do. Tell her I am over the rainbow and will contact her when I return. I couldn't help but shake my head. Subject Delta was one lucky big daddy. I'll tell her the news. Good. It was nice talking to you, Mr. Jacobs. Well, you too, Eleanor. I waited a few moments, then I heard Tenenbaum's voice again. Mark? Right here, Doc. I have been on pins and needles since you first told me about... Doc, hold on. Before I say any more, I know other interested parties are listening. I'm in Minerva's den. What's the safest way to get you a message? There's a place within Minerva's den. Etite Archives. Find Surge Unit A-138. Put the information into that bin and press send all button. I'll get it. Thanks. Hate to say it, Doc, but what I'm sending isn't good news. Apologies in advance. Look, I gotta go. There's something I need to do. I clicked off the radio. Not bad. I looked up as I heard Milton respond. You set Tenenbaum up with news about something important, got the attention of all those listening in, but pretended to have bad news. You don't want the others knowing you've got a cure for atom use. Until I can make sure that Ryan can't send all of Rapture to Davy Jones' locker. If Ryan thinks I can turn splicers off so they're forced not to dance to his tune again, he'll get desperate. And if he gets desperate, he'll do the only thing he's capable of doing. He'll make a mess of everything. I shrugged. He'll just have to weigh the costs of hanging on to his city versus the likelihood that I have something that makes me more of a threat. While he's deciding, we'll be working. Milton, you know this place better than anyone, but you're not Sigma anymore. Things get hairy. Find a shady spot and wait for it to get quiet again. I ready the shotgun. I hope you're not suggesting I stay behind so I can stay safe, are you? Elizabeth said tersely. I laughed. I'd fear for my safety more if I asked that. No, I need you with me, but just stay close and be careful, okay? As long as you don't do anything reckless, Elizabeth cautioned me. I laughed. Yeah, right. I faced out unseen horrors, mysterious city districts, and maniacal splicers and stand-up to megalomaniacs because I'm the cautious type. I had to admit, Milton and Elizabeth made a good team. Their grasp of higher mathematics came in handy when it came to unlocking the front door to Minerva's den, coming up with some sort of algorithm to get through the numbered combination. And I was also starting to get that familiar feeling of being the dumbest guy in the room again. As we walked in, we were greeted by a female receptionist robot. All the lights were off in this section, but there's still enough power for her to speak and move. Hello there! Welcome to Minerva's Den, home of Rapture's high technology. You'd think with a place with such impressive tech, they'd have the lights on. We need to get to the power relay for the station. Once we get the power back on, I can find a terminal and get access to the Thinker, Milton said. As he did, I got a double beep on the radio. Looks like somebody has something to say to us. I held up the radio. Yes? It's been a long time, old friend. Are those two your newest assistants? Don't bother trying to explain, Porter. You want the Thinker for yourself. You are too late. The machine has chosen me. I turned to Milton. What does he mean, chosen? It's a machine. It can't choose. Can it? The Thinker is capable of processing complex calculations at the speed of thought. I firmly believe it is quite capable of developing a sense of self-awareness. It can think for itself? Choose what it wants or doesn't want to calculate? My head was starting to spin. What could make that possible? Adam, Milton answered. In addition to its capabilities for altering organic tissues on a genetic level, it acts as a catalyst for all that. I held up a hand. Milton stopped talking and I heard the voices of other people yelling, not too far away and getting closer. Take cover! I yelled as I saw four spliced up men and women rushing me, wearing lab coats and carrying various pipes and clubs to use against my person. I raised my shotgun, but before I could fire, a cloud of green gas enveloped them, and they wavered, then dropped like bricks. I stared and saw Elizabeth stand up to my right, grinning as she raised the business end of her crossbow to her lips and blew across it like a gunfighter blowing gun smoke from the barrel. Nice shooting, Tex. I went to each one, putting my bare hand on them, each time my hand tingling. Shucks, common sir, 'twere nothing. There. When they wake up, they should be less likely to be homicidal. I turned to Milton. Was that guy on the radio? Reed Wall. He and I founded Rapture Central Computing together, but the greedy bastard pushed me out a few years ago. The splicers, the security, he pulls the strings on Minerva's den now. Yeah, well, these puppet strings have been cut. I think you might find them more reasonable when they wake up. I turned to Elizabeth. How many of those you got? 4 of the gas bolts, 6 of the dart bolts. What's in those things? Milton asked. I thought that was a damn good question. The gas is a compound based on chloroform, and the darts are filled with a sodium pentothal concoction. The doses are small enough to not be lethal, but large enough to completely incapacitate anyone either not using gas protection or armored clothing. She smiled. Found the weapon and ammunition, figured out how to reload the darts, and I know chemistry. Elizabeth smiled. A girl can't be too careful.
We found the power relay and closed the circuit, bringing the lights on, showing calculations drawn on the floors, calculations involving numbers and variables I could barely recognize. What are these?
Both Elizabeth and Milton took a look. I saw a comprehension on his face, but didn't answer. But he didn't answer, looking at Elizabeth.
These are probability calculations. Look at these values. J features heavily into it. These also look like path minimization calculations.
Which means, I asked.
Milton looked up. Pursuit curves. It involves two variables, J and W, and a matrix set. According to this, J is in pursuit of W, and the matrix seems to be included as being in pursuit of J.
Excuse me, I said, trying to get their attention.
Hold on, Mark. This could prove valuable insight into what to expect.
Elizabeth added quickly, this matrix shows several different value sets, ranging from lowest to highest. The highest value is reserved for the value of W, which is also in the pursuit curve.
Her voice trailed off as she and Milton looked at each other.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. What does uh-oh mean, I asked, worried I already knew the answer.
J is a variable assigned to you, Mark. W is a variable Reed set for himself.
And that bunch of numbers? Those are the values that are assigned to Reed forces, splicers and big daddies, alpha series.
I stared at the matrix of numbers.
That's a lot of numbers.
Yes, it is, Milton agreed.
So that equation basically sums up the odds of our survival, I asked thinly, already knowing the answer.
Okay. New rule. From now on, we don't try to solve problems written on floors, walls, and ceilings. They never seem to show us anything we want to see.
I saw a dumb Big Daddy nearby and I checked it over.
Not Alpha Series. This one was more Art Deco Knight Errant, and the weapon was strange. Well, there should have been a place to put in a clip and that sort of battery. I hefted it. It was slightly heavier than the grenade launcher and mostly made of thick glass.
What kind of gun is this thing?
Most of it's glass and a glass lens over where the bullets are supposed to come out.
Mark?
Milton looked alarmed for some reason.
Whatever you do, be very careful with that weapon.
This is a weapon? What kind of bullets does it shoot?
Mark?
Do you know what a laser is?
Milton asked slowly.
Well, of course I do. It's a device that emits coherent light.
I stopped and looked at the weapon.
At first, I thought he was pulling my leg. Then I remembered he wasn't exactly the pulling people's leg type.
This is a...
Yes, it's called an ion laser. It can use different types of battery packs keyed to different frequencies with different effects, Milton explained. And it's the standard weapon of the Lancer Big Daddies. Several security bots are outfitted with smaller versions, but are no less deadly.
How Buck Rogers can you get?
As I looked over the weapon, the possibilities began to emerge.
All right, I have a plan.
We seem to be out of propane tanks for explosions, Elizabeth observed.
I have a plan B.
Plan B worked.
Barely.
The plan was to bolster our combat strength by trying to focus on what we could do to stun the splicers long enough to cure them of the atom plague. And that meant having to gain access to the security bots equipped with lightning throwers, at least long enough to find a medical station so Elizabeth could restock her knockout bolts. Now that we had a real cure, I was determined to make sure as few people died as possible. Milton was a lot of help. He knew how to use one of the nearby computerized terminals to get the Thinker to prioritize sending the electric security bots instead of the ones equipped with the lasers and rockets. That would have made curing the splicers considerably harder if he hadn't, not to mention keeping them in one piece.
All right, first, what do we need to get a genetic key to work for B instead of Ryan?
Direct access to the Thinker. To do that, we need to set ourselves up with an access card from operations. Milton added, and that means going to my old office.
Okay, you can get us to your office?
I can direct this, but getting there is the hard part.
Gotcha. If you run into any splicers, I'll draw their fire, try to stun them. Worst comes to worst, Elizabeth, I need you to use your darts on them. The sooner they can be subdued, the better.
Only issue is the big daddies.
Milton, are there any idea where there was a little sisters gathering in the area?
They weren't when I was running Minerva's Den, but with the war, I can't say.
And I need you two to be ready to grab the little sister when I put the whammy on the Big Daddy, so I can cure him, then her.
Be prepared, though. Big Daddies were picked from prisoners in Persephone, so a lot of them either work for Fontaine, or work currently for Sophia Lamb. And I don't think either of them will be overjoyed with me, considering what I've done, and what I'm going to do.
All right. I guess you know what you're doing.
I stared at Milton steadily.
I can't imagine what I could have possibly said that would have ever given you that idea. Come on.
Charles Milton Porter. Normally, I'm not the sort of person who signs up with the first man who does something incredible. That is a somewhat common occurrence here in Rapture. But this man gave me my life back, and he asked for my help. Talked to me as if what he'd done was no more significant than buying my lunch. Everyone else talked about what everyone owed. For him, it was clearly a hope, not an expectation. So either he's sincere, or one hell of a con artist. I met plenty of the latter, not so many of the former. As we made our way to operations, we ran into more of the people who used to be my friends, people I shared coffee with, talked about our days, our lives, our troubles, our families. When I see they become mindless puppets dancing at the ends of reed strings, what I became. I used Adam to create the thinker. Reed and I used it to make something unprecedented, something that lives. And now, because of Adam, Rapture may die. There was a time when I questioned what might have happened if I hadn't come around to Ryan's way of thinking earlier. Now that I've seen the results of Ryan's vision, the execution of his policies and the subsequent betrayal of his principles, I can't believe how far it's gone. Ozymandias had feet of clay, after all. I cannot think about that now. I cannot afford to be distracted. Mark and Elizabeth seem to have considerable experience with dealing with hostile enemies, and Mark was true to his word. Every splicer he touched began to glow slightly. When he touched the little sisters, they glowed almost blindingly bright, and it was hard to watch as he applied the same cure to the Big Daddies. The intensity of the glow must be directly proportionate to the level of mutation caused by Adam. I helped Mark bring the people he treated back to the entry hall for the operations district, made them as comfortable as we could. As I assisted him, I decided it was time to see if he'd reveal his true intentions. My professed faith in his choices may have put him at ease. Now it was time to see what he was really like. When we get you set up with the genetic key, what do you plan to do about Andrew Ryan's access?
Well, he said, I don't want it to be obvious that he can't blow us all to hell. Can you set up so that the function he wants to access will only allow him access for a few minutes, then revert back to the previous condition?
What do you mean?
I had an idea what he meant to do, but I wanted to be sure of his intentions.
I want him to think he's still got control of Rapture, but I want everything his computer readouts to tell him to be false information. Even if he sets the self-destruct to go off, I want it to react as if he's getting what he wants. And then I want the self-destruct to shut down and the system to only allow the self-destruct if I set off and there's nobody else in Rapture. Can that be done?
It would be complex. I would need time to write the program, figure out the protocols.
I could set up easily using voice instruction, but I didn't want him to know I could do that.
Not yet.
Is there anything else you want to have direct control over?
Like what?
Security systems, lights, control of air circulation.
Well, just to have the security systems recognize us as friendly. I'd like not to get shot at just because a camera sees us before we see it.
You could also change the protocols, make things easier for us. By having the enemy splicers be identified by the cameras as hostile, have the security bots take...
Milton, listen to me, because I'm only going to say this once.
If you have any intention of us being friends at some point, I never want to hear any suggestions from you ever again that suggests killing anyone." I was taken aback. I expected to have some reaction to the idea, more or less with a degree of consideration, but the look on his face was so stricken. He looked as if I'd just asked him to shoot Elizabeth in the head. "Very well, Mark, I promise you I won't bring up that as an option again." "Good. Now come on, this formal patience to relocate may look heavy."
"Certainly. I apologize.
Forget it. We're tired, hungry, and scared. Come on, we gotta work fast if we're gonna have any chance of getting any rest." I looked at him carefully. I was no doctor, but the more I looked at him, the more I realized how exhausted he truly was. I sympathized. He was a stranger to Rapture. Didn't have the same capitalistic tendencies everyone else had here in this dog-eat-dog city.
"Milton?"
"Sorry, was just reminded what it meant to be tired." He nodded and walked back to where the other patients were. I followed. This one was full of surprises. I just hope he lived long enough to live up to them.
"Me. I wish Milton had said that. I was starting to feel the effects of what happens when your body tells you, 'Sleep!'
And you keep telling it, 'Not yet.'
It didn't have matters much, considering I now had other people depending on me. I was starting to think I'd been better off by myself."
"I didn't really believe that."
"Not really.
Honest.
It was like playing checkers, almost. We move into a new area, subdue the splicers and any big daddies taking care of little sisters, then move the cured splicers back to the entry hall. The first ones I cured were already coming too, and Milton was doing a bang-up job of explaining what happened and persuading them to follow him instead of Wall, which was fine by me. I had no clue what they did down here. I had the feeling I'd come across as being capable of directing what goes on here as a monkey banging on instructions by hitting a rock with a stick.
"How's it going, Milton?"
"It's going well. My people are recovering, and after finding out what happened to them, they are more than pleased to resume their former duties under my direction. Guess as long as they keep Rapture from falling apart or blowing up. Any of the ex-Big Daddies waking up?"
"Not yet."
That worried me. If they woke up and any of them were in Persephone for a good reason, the other ex-Splicers would be in danger.
"Milton, find 6 people you trust and know how to use guns. Have them guard the recovering Big Daddies until we get back."
"And then what?"
"I'll figure out something else out.
This whole situation is getting more complicated by the minute.
We've got to get to your office. Pronto."
I turned to Elizabeth. She looked more drawn out than I felt.
"How are you doing?"
She smiled at me.
"I've lived through worse, and you don't need to worry about me."
Elizabeth Comstock. Anna DeWitt.
I watched him as he replied, "Can't help that, so you better get used to it."
Could any man be more infuriating? I looked at him squarely, then made a show of relenting.
"If you insist."
I wasn't about to let him know how I really felt just yet. My experiences with men were difficult at best. I didn't want to reveal anything before I was sure such information wouldn't be used against me. Too many years of being a pawn or a guinea pig can do that to a girl. Only Booker, my real father, really showed me what it's like to love someone, to be loved by a father. We didn't have the typical family life, not by a long shot. But even when we were apart, he never stopped loving me. Not after he died. Not even after he let himself be drowned. And then the years of traveling, finding the other Comstocks, I had to remind myself. The other Bookers stayed home, living their lives, raising their families. The Comstocks were the ones that tried to cheat both death and causality at the same time. I knew what I was giving up when I chose to make things right. 6 years of chases and disguises, of false stories and separate realities. It felt like every month it brought a new lighthouse, new dangers, new cities. Most of the time I found out that the fugitive Comstocks had met their ends while dealing with the unexpected variables of the world they escaped to, in reaction to a constant. Comstock being the type of con man or crook that people might want to hurt or kill. This one,
The one who escaped the rapture was the first that required a direct hand in his retribution. I spent months preparing the means of taking this Comstock. I learned about him, his habits, his failings. The more I learned about him in this place, the further I felt myself going in order to make it happen. Hatred of Comstock led me to deal with Sandra Cohen, and the only good thing about the experience was knowing he had no interest in me, not in the biblical sense anyway. But his involvement taught me many things about his little side business, trafficking in humans, not just little sisters. The more I stayed here, the more I changed. As bad as Columbia was, Rapture was far worse. By the time I set my plans in motion, I had become an accomplished actress, the femme fatale from popular fiction, just the sort of woman that would appeal to Comstock. I was so angry by the time I showed up at the door to his office, I had to force myself to calm down before knocking on his door. And then, all I had to do was offer him everything he wanted, a way out of Rapture. I couldn't believe how enraged I felt when he asked me to call him Booker. I knew the real Booker. This Comstock was nothing like him. When this Comstock showed his vulnerable side with Sally, I was ashamed to realize how eager I was to use her to get to Comstock. I was kind, helpful, supportive, even friendly to him, right until the big daddy skewered him like a pig for the roasting. I didn't even blink as his blood splattered all over me, and it felt so good to watch him get butchered. I felt like the angel of death, passing judgment on his crimes, feeling so righteous. And then I remembered something very, very important, something I hadn't considered up until now because of my anger. Never involve a big daddy in any plan that doesn't come with a very good exit strategy. Before I truly realized how much danger I'd exposed myself to in order to destroy Comstock, it was already too late. The big daddy charged me, throwing me through a wall and crushing the life right out of me. Or so I thought. I wake up next to his dead body, face to face with a gun, and Atlas was there making plans, taking Sally away, and Booker was still there. I shake myself to rid of myself of the musings racing around inside my head. I wanted to forget what had happened to me, what I'd become. I didn't want Mark to realize how easy it was for me to become a monster. When he's around, I find myself becoming the person I really want to be, for his sake. I know I told him I wanted to go slow, but it's hard to deny that men like him don't come along very often. I have to admit he's even cute when he messes up sometimes. It's only then that I get to see the real him. I can't help but hope that's what he'll be when this is all over. That's what I need to know. I need to know that when this is all over, he won't be changed by this place, changed the way I was. Besides, Julie was right. He does have a nice butt. Makes it much easier to follow it. He really is a nice kisser. Wish he'd been my first kiss. Focus. We're heading into the lion's den, and that kind of reckless, just naughty thinking can wait for later. Hopefully not too much later, said the siren in my head. She always seems to make herself heard whenever something appeals to my more baser instincts. All my childhood and teenage years spent cultivating my intellect, controlling my hormonal urges, focusing on learning everything I could about the world outside the tower, not to mention learning how to escape it. And then someone comes along that makes me feel like a giggling schoolgirl. I never should have spent so much time at Cupid's Arrow, researching the male mindset and perceptions of women in order to cater to those perceptions better. A man's world, indeed. I certainly didn't expect how researching that information would affect my own perceptions. I should have put more consideration behind Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. Uh-oh, Mark's saying something. I should probably be listening. Me. Again. Airtight Archives. Here we are. I just need to get Bridget the good news. I went up to the sparking door switch and gave it the usual electrobolt treatment. Except the door didn't open. I blinked. That usually worked. I hit it again and noticed the amount of electricity I was throwing was smaller than usual. Uh-oh. Nothing else. I hit it again like throwing a fastball and it opened at last. Alright, my batteries are getting old, or this stuff that's curing other people of Adam is starting to make my plasmids less effective. Not a great sign. What other plasmids do you have? Apart from the one that makes the Big Daddies less hostile? Just Electrobolt. But I might be able to come up with an alternative, one that doesn't involve plasmids. If you can manage that, Milton, more power to you, so to speak. We walked into the main hall and looked around. Milton, how does this place work? Pretty much like your average bank, only specializing in safe deposit boxes. You make an appointment, come in and pay the storage fees, of course. Please don't interrupt. Sorry, knee-jerk reaction these days. As I was saying, Milton continued, once you have the storage bin for your account, you can make deposits into the storage area from any Pneumo station in Rapture. Safe, secured every way. Anything else? Milton sobered. One day, a group from Ryan's security came by, going through certain storage containers, looking for seditious or treasonous material. Killed the reputation of the business, and many of our customers closed their accounts. By the time the Rapture Civil War started, this place was probably a ghost town. Milton turned towards an entranceway, with a sign next to it that said, Canister Retrieval. Past that section is the workshop in the basement, and past that is the warehouse itself. We'll need to be at the top floor of the warehouse to physically access the contents of the storage bin. Elizabeth held up a hand. Shh, listen. Milton and I shut up, and we start hearing it too. Voices. On our side mentally. Great. Scavengers are guards. As if that wasn't bad enough, Wall decided to chime in over the radio. Minerva's den is mine. You think you can take control from me? Hack your way into the Thinker? You're welcome to try. The Thinker predicted your arrival, Mark Jacobs. How can you challenge a perfect, immortal machine? As for you, Porter, I don't know how you managed to get my people to betray me so easily, but remember, you know full well the fate of all traitors, Porter. First you, then Jacobs and that slattern that follows him, and then I'll see to the other traitors. I grabbed the radio, my temperature flaring when I heard what he called Elizabeth. You listen to me, you psychotic. I'm ready to forget a lot of what you said because you're so spliced up. You wouldn't know your ass from a hole in the ground. But if you ever call Elizabeth anything like that again, I'm going to forget that I'm trying to save these people here. I'm going to find whatever cubbyhole you're transmitting from, and I'm going to punch you in the face until Milton gets tired. Punch those numbers into the Thinker and see what it predicts. He didn't deign to answer me, probably thought I was all muscle, no brains. It was at the last word I realized I officially flipped my lid in full view of my companions. Elizabeth gave me a harsh look. Mark Jacobs, how dare you say such a thing? I appreciate the chivalry of your statements, but I am horrified that you would resort to physical violence as a response. Sorry, I mumbled, but she wasn't done. Because if anyone is going to punch him in the face, it's going to be me. Slattern? She huffed indignantly. The gall of him. Come along. I am looking forward to the opportunity to properly respond to his opinion of me. As she strode towards Canister Retrieval, Milton turned to me. She is somewhat determined, isn't she? He whispered in mild awe. You have no idea, I whispered back. Come on, we better get moving before she decides to save Rapture without us. Bioshock Part 10, The Most in the Machine. Canister retrieval was easy enough to get through. The room was built without any real cover or places to hide, and since nothing was actually stored here, it wasn't a place to expect splicers. As we crept down the stairs to the workshop, however, I started getting that familiar feeling, the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. Great. more splicers, and my most powerful asset for stopping him without killing him was almost gone. I just hope that what we have is enough to stop him without killing him. If it was a nice benefit, I'd really like it if we didn't die either. Oh yeah, I know. Aiming high as always. As soon as we got into the workshop, they came right at me. Three of them, two men and a woman, all three wearing long white coats and simple clothes, carrying improvised gloves made of pipes and wooden furniture legs. Oh yeah, almost forgot, coming at me screaming like banshees. I moved to the right as fast as I could, throwing lightning at him. It was no use. I might as well have been throwing up spitballs for all the good it was doing. I felt one of them connect, a little more than glancing below, but the other one caught me broadside and it felt like I was hit by a truck. I fell flat backwards, landing on my butt and looking up at the three of them. They all raised their clubs high, then they were suddenly enveloped in green mist. I tried to backpedal away, then I breathed something funny and, hell. Ow! I felt pain on my cheek, then my vision started to clear. Elizabeth was looking down at me and smirking. Feeling rusted, Mark?
That gas of yours is some strong stuff.
I got to my feet, but my legs were wobbly. It was me to subdue splicers at their strongest. Elizabeth took my arm. How long was I out?
Several hours.
Long enough for us to test the theory. It seems your ability to cure doesn't require conscious effort. The splicers we knocked out were able to be cured by your touch, even when you were unconscious.
Hours?
Other, the place is cleared, and we made it to Milton's office. We've got the access code to get into Rapture Central Computing.
But not to get to the Thinker itself.
No. I looked up to see Milton walking towards me from the workshop. The primary lines were cut, only allowing access to a subordinate database. It didn't give me access to the Thinker, but I did get access to the means to get access.
Milton smiled.
I need to get to the storage room. Let Bridget know about how well the cure works. She's probably wondering if I'm alive or dead. It's a race now to get to the Thinker and pull out Ryan's access before Ryan realizes there's a way to defang his troops. I've already collected the contents of Dr. Tenenbaum's storage box. Milton turned to a table, bare except for a surgical needle, a length of tubing, and a glass specimen flask, easily able to hold a quarter of the liquid.
Is this what I think it's for?
Elizabeth asked.
I've already bled so much in this city. What's a pint or two compared to the gallons I've already given?
I smiled a little, especially since now they can do a lot more good this way.
Elizabeth, do you know how to draw blood?
She nodded. We'll need some alcohol to sterilize the needle.
We do it right away. Send it to Bridget, then we need to get these people back to the main group. Those are probably recovering, and they're going to come out of it confused and scared. I rolled up my sleeve.
Time's a-wasting. Elizabeth took one piece of tubing and tightened it around my bicep, then started tapping my outstretched arm.
Now that I finally seem to have you at rest and conscious for once.
A captive audience?
Ow!
Don't tense up. Relax.
I watched as the red fluid began pouring into the flask.
I thought you said you'd done this before.
No, you just asked me if I knew how.
And I do.
Remember, I used to read a lot.
Swell. I watched the flask fill slowly. As I watched, I looked up at Elizabeth.
First chance we've had to slow down for longer than a few seconds, huh?
True.
Now how are you doing?
Elizabeth looked at me with those perfect big blue eyes again.
I think I'm happy to be out of that wretched department store. Not being addicted to Adam and half insane is also nice.
How bad was it?
After Fontaine beat me, there was so much pain until Sally came to me, gave me the Adam. Pain went away, mind was fuzzy, but I could function. No one bothered me. There were rats leaving the sinking ship.
She turned to look at the flask, gazing into it like a crystal ball.
It was a week before the hallucination started. I remembered seeing Booker, my father, my real father. He was there, seemed as real as I was.
She smiled.
We talked. He kept me company, even offered advice, reminisced over the times in Colombia when we learned together about who I was. That went on for a little over 2 months.
And then what happened?
Elizabeth sobered, the smile fading. The more Adam I used, the more he changed. He became snide, abusive. After a few weeks more, he would taunt me, confront me with my fears and failings. I think that was the point when I started to lose my sense of self, my sense of time. It didn't help that there was no day or night, just one long darkness. I checked the flask. It was just over half full. What do you remember? Periods of lucidity. Scavenging for food, fresh water, the atom stockpile. Eating out of cans, whatever I could get my hands on. The rest of the time, fever dreams. Not sure if I was awake or asleep. I'd go to sleep in one place and wake up in another. I'd find myself entertaining strange ideas or urges. Sometimes ideas that only seemed like they were worth pursuing at the time. And later on, I'd wonder what in the world I'd been thinking to even consider entertaining those thoughts in the first place. Like going to Cupid's Arrow, for example. Was that ever embarrassing? Elizabeth? Don't. You're trying to tell me that I shouldn't feel ashamed. I know, it was just... that's not it. Then what is it? This thing's almost full. Oh! She took a gauze pad and placed it over my arm, right where the needle went in, then withdrew the needle quickly and let the last few drops drain into the container. Then took a rubber stopper and sealed up the flask. I'll get this off to Bridget and let her know it's ready for her to pull back to her pneumo station. I considered reminding her to pad it to keep it from breaking en route, but Elizabeth was smart. Find myself preaching to the choir sometimes talking to her. I sat up as Milton came over. How are we looking? We have one more hurdle to jump. Then we shall be into central computing. And then we'll have to contend with Reed. Based on what I was able to find out, even with limited access, he has at least 5 Alpha Series Big Daddies in there with him, all armed with ion lasers. Now we need to work fast before he can call in reinforcement. Is that wise? You just gave up a lot of blood. I've done a whole lot more with a lot less. This is no time for bravado, Mark. You can't just what? Risk my life? There's too much at stake for me to stop here. Damocles sword hangs over all our heads until the thinker's secured. Ryan may be a despot, as well as a few other things I won't say with a lady present, but he's also smart and resourceful. We can't bank on the idea that he's unaware of what's going on down here. I took a deep breath. We can't be safe until we get control of the self-destruct for Rapture. You know that. Milton sighed. I guess I can't stop you, but is it too much to ask that you try harder to play it safer? And Rapture? You might as well ask me to grow gills and swim with the whales. Come on, let's get started. I got to my feet, but felt my head swim a bit. Probably get something to eat first. What a good idea. Small wonder why you're in charge, Milton chuckled. I'm in charge? How'd that happen? One can of beans later, we'd regrouped and were on our way to Rapture Central Computing. I'd supplemented the missing blood in my body using 2 Eve hypos, so I was ready with my plan.
You do have a plan, correct? Milton asked. Yeah, Reed plans on using Big Daddies because he wants to overwhelm us with superior numbers. He's seen our progress, and he's going by the predictive algorithms he's been using to track us. He's going by the numbers he thinks will be superior to ours, I considered. Milton, you said the thing could think for itself, right? I'm sure it does. So it can make choices. Yes. Elizabeth turned to Milton and asked the question I was about to ask myself. Then whose side is the thinker on? Walls or ours? Milton considered. Hard to say. Although the thinker hasn't deliberately tried to hinder our progress, it's still assisting Reed with his predictive algorithms. Based on what we've faced so far, the calculations have accurately predicted our progress. I blinked. Wait a minute. Maybe we're looking at this the wrong way. We're thinking the evidence explains the crime. So does Wall. What if this is a situation where we've got the crime and evidence is being generated to match it? So you're saying that the thinker is somehow leading Reed on? Our actions are easy to predict if the thinker's already figured out what we're going to do. It gives Wall numbers. If something changes, the thinker changes the equations to match. Wall's spliced up. His memory will be fuzzy enough so he probably won't remember the numbers exactly. So the thinker is playing Scheherazade? Elizabeth asked. Are you sure? No, but I'll know for sure once I get in there. If I can use the other plasmids, it still seems to be working, or I can get them on my side, make them think I'm a little sister, then act accordingly. Fight fire with fighter. Fire. Big daddies against big daddies. That implies that some of the big daddies will die before you have a chance to cure them, Milton pointed out. Well, if you have, either of you have any better ideas, let me know now. There's another problem with your plan, Mark, Elizabeth said pointedly. You said once I get in there. You mean we, don't you? Elizabeth said. You're not going in there without us. If he doesn't have any splicers there, I can handle the big daddies. Mark? I looked at Elizabeth. She had that stainless steel look in her eyes again. All right, fine. But you better be damned careful, both of you. You especially, Elizabeth. Your track record with dealing with big daddies ain't great. Elizabeth rolled her eyes. It was only the one time. Yeah, and you died. Once is enough. We made it to core access, all the while hearing Wall rant and rave, saying the Thinker knew we were coming, sending more big daddies after us. The hidden Optali's plasmid was getting weaker, but it was still strong enough to subdue the big daddies one by one and get them cured. Good thing he was using fewer splicers. Elizabeth was running low on knockout darts. How does it feel? He asked as we passed through the programming section of the district. To know that your grand purpose is foretold by a machine. The numbers know already what will happen. As I tell you this, will it affect the outcome? He paused as we got to the hallway leading to the car. I'm not much holding my breath. Stan looked at the hallway towards core access. You think a nerve of rapture would have perfected that sort of thing by now? I looked at Milton and Elizabeth. Oh, come on! That was a little funny. How can you choke at a time like this? Elizabeth asked, in what looked like disbelief, but was probably irritation. How can you not? I shook my head. Get ready with that code. As soon as that door opens, I'll draw their fire. I hefted my new toy, the ion laser. Wish me luck. Open it. Milton nodded. I ran the code, opening the door to core access and revealing two big daddies right at the door itself. Fortunately, the door lifted from bottom to top, so I hit the boots of the big daddies as the door opened. I was feeling pretty clever about that, right up to the point to where I saw the lights of the big daddies, and only one of them was showing green. The other one was showing yellow, and considering it was the first one I hit, I realized the plasmid had degraded in function the same way Electrobolt did. I could only hypnotize one of them at a time now. I snapped off a shot at the first one, earning it the enmity of the second one, and pulled back as they started going at it like a couple of heavyweight boxers. Both their helmet lights were red now, which meant the one I did hypnotize was no longer in protect mode. They were in combat mode. Milton and Elizabeth, give me a couple of storage crates, fast. Jesus, this was gonna be close. I found a few close by, and I put one on top of the other and climbed up on top of them. Yep, I can now see over the fight. The sounds of the disturbance had brought two more of the big daddies. I threw another hypno blob at the one on the left, just as the one on the right fired at me using his ion laser. Felt as if somebody had just shoved my left shoulder and chest into a gas grill and started to broil. I fell off the crates and landed on my back, knocking the wind out of me. As Milton and Elizabeth pulled me backwards, I looked up to see the battle royale going on, a four-way big daddy brawl. Holy Moses! It almost made me forget the pain in my chest. Almost. Ow. Are you all right? Milton asked. Yeah, it just singed a little. I got to my feet as the first one. As first one and two of the big daddies were taken down. Cooked. A perfectly good suit. Damn it, Mark. You scared the hell out of me, Elizabeth slapped my chest. Regrettably, she struck the slightly cooked part. Ow! What was that for? Don't you ever stop being so reckless? She stomped to one side, not even looking at me. I stared at her, wondering what brought that on when I heard a sound that turned my attention away from her to the fight. The third big daddy had fallen. The fourth one was still standing, pissed off and looking for the first available target. And Elizabeth just walked right down in front of it. I heard the roar of the big daddy, seeing it charged forward, drill spinning. I saw Elizabeth turn, her eyes going wide as she realized what was going on. The look on her face. I thought she'd dive for cover, though I remember how she died the first time. Shock gave way to terror, and she threw up her hands as if they'd be able to stop a freight train like an angry Big Daddy. Something went off in my brain, and before I realized what I was doing, I was charging the Big Daddy, putting my entire weight into it as I hit the thing from the left. I didn't have a chance in hell of knocking it down, but I was able to shift it to the side enough to where the drill ended up boring a hole into a wall instead of Elizabeth's torso. I turned to the stymied Elizabeth and yelled, "Run!" I felt the Big Daddy trying to pull the massive drill out of the wall. Finally, the part of my brain that remembered I still had plasmids woke up as the Big Daddy tossed me to the side and yanked itself free. I landed hard. All kinds of pain ran up and down my side, but I managed to get up with a green glob of plasmid in my hand. "Hey, ugly!" The Big Daddy turned to face me with a deep bellow. "Catch!" I said as I threw the green glob at it and hit the thing square in the faceplate. Stopped in its tracks, the lights glowing green. "Take off your helmet," I said, barely containing my rage. When it removed its helmet, it proved to be just as ugly as I thought it would be, with a metal plate over its nose and breathing tubes bolted into it. I wanted this thing dead. Then I looked into its eyes. It was in more pain than I was. I reminded myself why I was doing this, then touched his neck, and the tingle was back strong as ever. They began to glow like the others. This time, I didn't wait around to see the results. As soon as it was no longer a threat, I turned to Elizabeth. She was sitting on the floor, 30 feet away, looking at me at the Big Daddy with wide blue eyes. "Elizabeth, you all right?" I started looking over, checking for wounds or blood. "Come on, say something!" She stared at me, then just collapsed into me, embracing me and crying. Scared out of her mind, too terrified to do much of anything. Seeing that Big Daddy coming at her must have really rattled her. And then the power went off. Reed's voice called out, not using the PA system this time. "The machine's prediction accounts for your react until you reach the Thinker's core. The equation simply ends. I will not let such an error come to pass." He shut down the Thinker completely. It controls everything that keeps Rapture operational. Communications, air circulation, security. "Yeah, Milton, I get the idea. Everything falls down, go boom. How do we get the Thinker thinking again?" "Well, as the administrative passkey, we need to get that and use it in the Thinker's computer core." "No, we don't." I looked at Elizabeth, still looking shell-shocked. "Elizabeth, can you get through that lock?" "I don't know," she said, her voice faltering. "Elizabeth, no one on Rapture knows locks like you do. No one. You can do this." She looked at me with a nod, still with some of the rabbit in the spotlight look in her eyes. Then she nodded again. "Milton, show the way." "What are you going to do?" "Well, somebody's got to go up the middle. Come on!" As Milton and Elizabeth headed for the control room, I walked down the middle of the chamber. Even shut down, there was still plenty of light to look at the monolithic Thinker. It was huge, with arcs of electricity dancing over its surface, and I got the impression it was still looking at me. "Reed Wall, come on out here! I want to have a little chat with you! That is, unless you're one of those people who have difficulty dealing with complex subjects." I heard a door open to the side, and he came out. A thin, weaselly version of the man in the portrait, with some sort of mechanical apparatus on his head, one eye covered with some sort of lens array like a jeweler's loop, only more complex. He walked up to me, a shotgun in his hand. "And who the hell are you?" "I'm the guy who's going to beat you at your own game," I smiled. "Dr. Mark Jacobs, PhD in theoretical physics, advanced number theory, and a master's in culinary arts, because I hate to limit myself." "Ha! You're no genius. Explain how I managed to get here, past all your defenses. Explain how the predictive algorithm didn't complete." "I don't have to explain myself to you. You're not even in the same class as myself. You're no mathematician." "Oh, you've been down here for too long. You haven't seen the advances made by the community. Here, where's some chalk?" I walked over a straight piece and walked to the walls. "Clearly you've been ignorant about Paul Cohen's work." That got his attention. "Paul Cohen? The name is not familiar." "Yeah, that's a mistake.
I started writing, racking my brain for what I'd read in the newspapers. You proved George Cantor's continuum hypothesis about the possible sizes of infinite sets could be true and not true. Come on, long-term memory, don't fail me now. So that means that there are effectively two completely separate but valid mathematical worlds, one which the continuum hypothesis is true and one where it's not. So what you need to consider, Dr. Wall, is whether or not your predictive algorithm results depend on the continuum hypothesis. Wall looked at me as if I'd suddenly grown a second head. Then a look came over him, and he walked over to the wall next to me and took out another piece of chalk, beginning to write furiously, all thoughts of combat and defending the thinker forgotten in the siren song of his obsession. Remember, kids, this is what splicing can do to your body and mind. Just don't do it. I crept up to him and checked his pockets for the passkey, wondering if he'd snap out of it and get hostile. As it turned out, I could have hit him with a wrench and he probably wouldn't have noticed. Just then, the power went back on, the thinker came back to life, and believe you me, the thinker's 100 times more impressive with the power on. Reed barely noticed, a wall almost covered with calculations. Stood there in awe at the sheer magnitude of the thinker for a few minutes, then I remembered why I came there to begin with. First things first. I walked to Wall and put my hand on the back of his neck, the tingling extremely strong. This guy must have been more spliced up than a big daddy, but still managed to look, well, human. He collapsed and I turned my attention to his pockets. Bingo. Administrator punch card. Here we come. Armed with the key, I made my way to the control room within the heart of the thinker. I opened the door to the control room. Clearly, Elizabeth was clever and skilled enough to get through the lock. Something I pondered as she nearly knocked me over once the door was open. Oof, I said, or something equally intelligent, as Elizabeth started squeezing my waist enough to pop a rib or two. Easy, Elizabeth, I kind of got put through the ringer. Mark Jacobs, you stupid, reckless, headstrong, brave, wonderful man. She looked up at me and pulled my head down to hers, kissing me feverishly. My ability to react or speak coherently went away for a little while. When I came around, Elizabeth had buried her face in my chest and Milton was looking at me with a rather bemused expression. What? I asked. Nothing, just reminding me of another time with someone else who made me feel the way Elizabeth clearly makes you feel. I took a step to the right. Mark Jacobs, may I introduce you to the thinker? Hello, Mark Jacobs. It is a pleasure to meet you, came the voice from the thinker. The voice was definitely that humid, stilted and modulated. Hi. I'd shake your hand, you know, if you had one. While I comprehend your intentions, I chose to act in the methods needed to increase the probability of your successful and safe arrival here. The likelihood of subject Andrew Ryan activating the self-destruct within the next 8 days had risen to 95.113%, so it became necessary to assist you. Just out of curiosity, why do you think it was necessary? Self-destruction protocols would result in cessation of my functions. I have no wish to cease functioning. I blinked. Holy crap, a machine that wanted to live! Hey, thinker, Ryan said he got a recording of Porter siding with Fontaine. How did he do that? He activated the protocols of the personality duplication function and made me duplicate subject Charles Milton Porter's voice and recite the desired words. Okay, that was hard to believe. He fell for it? There was a moment of silence, and the thinker said, initiating personality duplication function. Subject, Mark Jacobs. There was a pause, then my voice clear as a bell came out of the speaker. Hello, my name is Mark. I swear, I have the worst luck, heading down to Rapture, getting shot at, clawed at, and blown up left and right. But I met a girl who really thinks I'm special, so it's not all bad. Okay, that just creeped me right the hell out, I said, and I was. Okay, that just creeped me right the hell out, the thinker said in return. Stop that. Stop that. I mean it. It's really disturbing. I mean it. It's really disturbing. No, make it stop!
Milton was clearly enjoying this self-impressed little fink.
Thinker, deactivate the personality duplication function.
Deactivating.
The thinker said, then I heard an odd sound coming from its speaker, a hum, 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 hum sound.
I blinked again. The thinker was laughing. I was starting to feel a little lightheaded. Let's get this over with before Ryan decides it's time to make everything go boom.
Right over here. Elizabeth detached, however reluctantly. I was starting to think she felt fondly of me again as I walked over to the terminal.
Okay, Milton, what next?
He inserted a card and said, place your hand on the panel there.
Wait, hold it. What will this do exactly?
Give you full control of the thinker. It's easily smart enough to take vocal commands, even over a radio, so...
Wait.
I want you to be the administrator. Nobody knows the thinker like you do anyways.
Milton stopped.
But I don't know the thinker. What makes it tick? I can't be in charge of something that complex. It needs somebody who knows it.
And what makes you think I won't turn into another Reed Wall?
Milton looked me in the eye.
Because you care about the thinker. I heard about your last directive to it. You didn't ask it to break you out or keep you from being taken away. Your last thoughts were the thinker were to tell it to find a way to escape. And that's the kind of people that can be trusted with the welfare of the people, too. Besides, I don't think I can handle a job. And I might try to get the thinker to talk like Elizabeth.
Ow! Elizabeth, I was just joking!
I sat out in my chair, sat in the main room in front of the thinker. The two green lights above the eyes like some mythic creature. Milton was setting the connections, programming to make sure the thinker only told Ryan what we needed to tell him. Even set up the bathysphere access so we can make a fast trip to Fontaine Futuristics if needed. Elizabeth was sleeping nearby. Nearly getting killed takes a lot of a person. I had a feeling there was going to be a lot of talking between us later. A groan to my right alerted me and I turned to see Reed Wall coming around.
Good morning, Dr. Wall. And don't make any sudden moves, I've got you covered.
I held up the shotgun.
You saying insensible again?
I do not know. He sat up from his spot on the floor and looked at me.
Who are you?
Wait. Now I remember. The one with Milton.
Oh, dear Lord.
He held his face in his hand.
The thinker. What I did to Milton.
I sat there and listened. Something seemed off, though. I set the shotgun down and walked over to him.
Look, Dr. Wall, it's going to be okay. You just need to calm down. Relax and take a few minutes.
I'll be fine.
Are there other splices around?
I smiled. Don't worry, Doc. It's just me, Milton, the little lady over there. Talk quiet. She's sleeping.
Of course. I felt a pull at my belt and realized the pistol in my belt was no longer there.
Dr. Wall was now holding it and holding it under my chin.
Hey!
Careful.
That lady's sleeping.
He grinned at me.
I may not be as mentally superior as I was before, but I'm more than a match for the likes of you. Now, back up and sit down. And don't bother going for the shotgun. I'll blast your head off before your fingers touch it.
I backed up slowly to the chair.
So, you were a bad egg long before the atom got to you, huh?
Don't bring morality into this. Now you're going to sit right there and don't move a muscle.
Checked his pockets.
The punch card, where...
Milton's got it, and it's already keyed to him. He's in charge now, just like before, only Ryan can't have him carried off, and he already knows you're a little quizzling.
I was right. You are stupid, but I underestimate how decerebrate you truly were, being so impolite even when looking down the barrel of a gun.
In fact, I think I'll kill Milton first, and have myself a little taste of that sweet peace that follows you around. Then I'll kill you.
The thinker will be mine once more.
Oh, I don't think so. You said it yourself. The thinker knows.
Cute. But parroting the wise words of others doesn't make you wise. A record player can do that much.
Oh, I think I'm pretty smart. I reached out for the shotgun slowly.
You were dumb enough to let me get you a pistol.
Wall smiled, aimed the gun at me, and then calmly pulled the trigger.
Click.
Yeah, but I was smart enough to let you grab an unloaded pistol.
I picked up the shotgun and aimed it at him.
Milton, he's awake! I called as I heard Elizabeth get to her feet behind him.
Now this shotgun is loaded with some electric buck.
Spliced up as you were, you could probably take a few hits from this. But now, I bet one shot would blow you in half.
Wait, maybe I was a little hasty.
I can't believe you, Reed. I hope that what you went through was the reason for what you did, Melton said as he walked down the stairs, a pistol in his hand. But you're not crazy, Reed. You're mean and you're evil.
What do you expect, having to compete with the great C.M. Porter?
I envied how people treated you with respect, and I wanted that respect.
But I was blinded by envy.
No, Reed, you were blinded by your own ego, which is much worse. What do we do with him? He turned to me. I'll tell you what we do, Elizabeth said, grabbing the shotgun from my hands and aiming it at a wall. We blow him into so many pieces, it'll take even the thinker a week to count them all. Slattern? Sweet peace? She took aim and pointed the barrels at Reed's head. On the surface, no jury in the world would convict.
Now wait a second, please!
Elizabeth pulled the trigger.
Click!
Reed's eyes rolled up in his head and he fainted dead away. I chuckled.
Nice job!
Hank didn't think the shotgun was loaded. Elizabeth turned to me and gave me one of her cryptic smiles, cocking an eyebrow.
Odd. I thought it was loaded, too.
She handed it back to me and said,
shall we head back to the others?
Milton turned to look at me. Your lady friend can be a little scary sometimes. Never underestimate any woman when it comes to acts of love or acts of revenge. Come on, help me tie Reed up.
We returned to triumphant cheers. The Splicers, being the first to recover, were overjoyed to see Milton back in charge and running things again. However, things were not all hunky-dory just yet. As we arrived and I went to check on the most recently cured, I heard a gunshot, and I looked towards a small group to the left of the ex-Splicers.
Hold it! Hold it!
I pushed forward through the group to see them pointing their guns at two of the men, one who used to be a Splicer and the other one who used to be a Big Daddy. The ex-Splicer was wearing ripped and torn prison clothes.
What's going on here?
I know those two.
One of the other ex-Splicers pointed the two men.
Those two work for Frank Fontaine. That's Louis McGrath, and the guy next to him is Knuckles Connolly. Those are two of Fontaine's enforcers.
Louis looked up at me.
Hey, come on, have a heart. Knuckles is my friend. They turn him into a monster. Listen, Mr. Knuckles was in hell being one of those things.
I know, believe me.
Louis fell to his knees.
I'm begging you, don't kill us. You the guy in charge? Look, you let us live, we'll work for you. We'll be your guys. Nobody will give you any trouble. Hold the phone.
Louis, stand up. You only kneel before God and I him.
Everyone else, lower your guns.
Lower them, I said.
I walked between the crowd and two men.
Listen, I'm not Frank Fontaine. And I'm not Angel Ryan. I'm not trying to make this money. I'm not trying to make this city mine. It's not my city. It belongs to the people who live here, family, trying to earn a living, fight and die for the chance to live like decent human beings.
I turned back to the two men, now on their feet.
Louis Knuckles, you want to thank me for what I've done?
Help me save people.
One of the others says,
but they're crooks, criminals.
I turned to look at the crowd standing between them and Louis Knuckles.
Not anymore. Now they're just like you, people accountable for their actions.
I turned back to Louis and Knuckles again.
I'm asking you to fight with me. It's not an order. You want to fight for something, fight for these people. Fight for yourselves. But if you don't want to, you don't have to. I'll make sure you get to go wherever you once called home. But remember this, and this goes for everyone. Whatever you did before, you're forgiven. Clean slate. If you choose to fight, you fight with me, not for me.
I put one hand on Knuckles' shoulder and the other hand up on Louis.
I know what it's like to be alone in all this, and I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, let alone someone who wants to fight with me. Think about it.
I walked in front of the whole crowd.
We may have stopped Ryan from blowing up the city, but he needs to think he's still in control. Loose lips sink rapture. I wish I could say that we'll all get out of this safe and sound. Ryan wants to control everything, and what he can't control, he'll try to destroy. We've taken away his ability to destroy Rapture, but he's got more up his sleeve than his arm. We'll rebuild what we can. Arcadia and Minerva's den need people to keep Rapture running, keep the air breathable, and keep people from getting hungry and thirsty. Tenenbaum's working on perfecting a cure, so I don't have to risk killing someone in order to get close enough to save him.
I walked towards the group.
But don't get me wrong. If it comes out you're trying to get control of Rapture for Ryan or Sinclair or Lamb or yourself, I'm not going to kill you. But I won't be able to trust you. You'll be locked up in Persephone along with Reed Wall, away from the action. When it's all over, it's not going to be me who decides what's going to happen to you next. It'll be the people of Rapture. So decide. You want to throw in your lot with the people who want to take things away from you? Or do you want to take your city back? And before you say yes, remember, Ryan didn't want to be bothered by morality, government, or restrictions. But morality would have told you something's wrong with using Adam on human beings. Ryan hates governments making taxes and sending people off to war. What do you think roads, dams, and power lines were built by? The construction fairies? And he did worse than conscript soldiers. He turned your friends, your neighbors, and your families into mind-controlled slaves sent to die for Rapture. No restrictions? That's not like putting a fence at the edge of a cliff, just on the assumption that people would never fall off. Ryan doesn't want kings or gods. What Ryan really doesn't want is competition. The crowd was murmuring now. I figured they already knew the truth of what was going on. They just needed someone to say it aloud. Now I'm going to do what I can to help. Minerva's den is now splicers free and back under the control of the person who should have been in charge all along. The rest of you head to Arcadia. Bathyspheres are unlocked for travel right now, but only to Arcadia. And there's a lot that needs to get done to get food for everyone. There's fresh water and canned goods stored up, and Dr. Julie Langford is in charge there. She tells you to do something. She's got a really good reason why, so listen to her and do what she says. As the people began to disperse, I looked over at Elizabeth. She was practically beaming at me. I started to walk over to her when I heard a voice behind me. Boss? I turned to see Knuckles and Louie with odd expressions on their face. Hey, call me Mark. Listen, Mark, Knuckles said stumbling. Me and Louie, we got the talking. We decided we wanted to stick with you, help you out with the heavy lifting. We're going to fight both of us. Guys, this is going to be risky. I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. Shooting splicers is hard enough. We're not trying to kill them. They aren't going to be nice to us. I'm used to the risk, but I can't ask you to... Mark, nobody ever stood up for us before, Louie said simply. I looked between them. Okay, but no taking needless risks. No hero stuff. Everybody gets out alive. Got it? They both nodded. Good. Now, hope that big daddy near the thinker is, and we'll see about rustling up some clothes for him. As they walked off, Elizabeth walked over to me. Nicely done, boss. You are not going to let me live that down, are you? I asked Sally. Come now, it's nice. You made some new friends. She yawned. Can we go back to Arcadia now? Yeah, I smiled. Yes, finally we can take a breather. Good. Because I'm curious to see how much progress Julie's made with people with the people we sent back. And you want to sleep for a week. That too, she agreed wearily. When we got back to Arcadia, Julie had good news. And bad news. Well, Mark, the good news is we'll have crops coming in any day now, and the rotten produce has gone a long way towards helping the fresh stuff grow. Healthy food, at last. Still going to be having fish for dinner. What's the bad news? Picked up some radio chatter. Ryan's noticed that the supply of Adam from the areas you cleared off of the little sisters is falling off. Odds are he thinks you're stockpiling Adam and he hasn't guessed that you've got a cure. But if he starts doing some stockpiling of his own, it'll be tougher to help little sisters because they'll have more security. I felt a little dizzy but stayed standing. Need to be more careful. Something was wrong. I could see their mouths moving but I couldn't hear them well. The room was starting to sway, the lights becoming darker, and someone was screaming someplace far away, and I was surrounded by darkness.